Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Nusulu Williams.
I'll take it.
Also with us is intern slash ensign slash part-timer slash stenographer slash... Her credentials are still on the board, where the board is trying to figure out whether or not to hire Amy.
At least I'm still ensign, but I need to get up to lieutenant, man. Come on.
You'll always be a red shirt here.
There's promotions at the end of the month.
Are we recording that so people can witness this?
Or we can always remove that in post. Don't worry.
Oh, no.
As before stated, we are celebrating Star Trek Month with another star-studded month-long viewing party of Star Trek films, all curated by Mr. Spencer Williams. And this week we have an interesting review of 2009's Star Trek. So stick around for that. But before you do, Spencer, give them then opening credits.
Tune in each and every Thursday. On all your favorite streaming platforms and over our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got a website over at filmlosophers.com. Head on over there for allegedly over 300 episodes, including anything from sci-fi, action, comedy, suspense, anime, everything you're looking for. We got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also head over to wherever podcasts are streaming to listen to us as well, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desires on any one of those platforms. Give us a follow at The Filmlosophers listen up to what we got to say. If you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes.
We also have an announcement at the end of the episode of a giveaway, so stick around for that. And, we'll give the social links at the end of the episode as well. We were just talking a little bit ago before we went on, and it seems like the whole world is celebrating Star Trek Month in more ways than just one. And apparently Spencer said that there's been a uprising or uproar within the Star Trek community regarding something. Light.
There's a hullabaloo?
There's a hullabaloo.
A light one, yes. If you didn't know, September 8th is Star Trek Day, apparently. It's one of those things that Paramount's like, oh, yes, this has definitely been a thing. And
for forever.
Yeah, it's been a thing for like 3 years, I think. they were celebrating all of their Star Trek properties, and they put out just, you know, a series of YouTube videos. Like, you know, some were like kind of long at 22 minutes, some were kind of short. There was one particular one, though, that had people kind of upset, and it was talking about the animation history of Star Trek.
Huh? Wait, the animation history?
Yeah.
So there was an actual animated series?
Yes, there's many.
See, you failed to mention this. There's apparently many.
Yeah.
I just know of animation in Star Trek from Futurama. That's all I know. So,
Actually, it starts back in the 70s, I believe, with Star Trek the Animated Series, where they had basically same cast with like a few added characters because it's for children. Mm. And, you know, it's Shatner and everyone else just trekking across the galaxy. I never really saw that show. It had a very distinct animation style.
Now, here's the thing.
Yes.
The only thing I recall from that series, because I do recall that there was one, I just didn't know that it was actually a thing.
Mm-hmm.
All I remember is that meme of Shatner turning and looking at the camera with his hand. That's the only thing I know from the series. That's it. So,
yeah, mostly the memeableness of the series is the only thing I'm aware of, too. But from there, you go forward. You've got, what are some of the other ones? Because I'm only really recently remembering the recent ones. And you've got Lower Decks, which is
the recent one,
recent comedy series. There is also one called Star Trek Prodigy, which was mysteriously missing from any mention of this entire celebration.
Really?
Yeah. Star Trek Prodigy was a children's television show that actually just came out, I want to say like a year and a half ago or so.
So it's fairly recent.
Fairly recent. It's a semi-Voyager sequel where it has a few Voyager characters showing up from time to time. Basic premise of that show is a bunch of kids in the Delta Quadrant of the Milky Way galaxy find a lost Federation vessel. There's no one aboard, and they just take it on an adventure on their way back to Starfleet.
That was a Nickelodeon project, I see.
Earlier this year, after they finished up season one, and while they were working on it for season two, Paramount decided to can it, which is crazy since it's almost done. So
the whole series,
yeah, like the second season was almost done and ready to
broadcast.
Yeah, and so
they Batwoman that stuff, man.
Yeah,
Batwoman never even saw the light of day.
Yeah, but it's almost done.
Yeah,
this is the same thing, except like at least parts of it are seeing the light of day because they've been trying to placate people. Like, no, it's still, you're gonna see it somewhere, not here, because even though they've been billing themselves as like the home of Star Trek, this is now missing. Like, they took season one off their service and they're kind of just like shopping it around.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's like they're actively trying to get rid of it.
Yeah.
So what are fans saying?
Mostly people were just kind of shocked at like the goal to like celebrate the history of Star Trek animation and then not mention one of their most recent series.
Wow. Was it good? I mean, was it at least worth talking about?
Yeah. Like, most Star Trek series have, like, a little bit of a rough, like, first start. This one actually kind of, like, got it together pretty quickly. Like, the first six episodes are a bit rough, but, like, after that, like, it did pretty well. The children actors on it were actually great.
Really?
Yeah. They, like, brought it all home. They did a good job.
Amy, have you seen any of these series?
I've seen the memes for the animated 70s Star Trek.
Okay, so you're in the same boat as
So that one, I've seen previews and trailers for Lower Decks, which I'm like, I could get into this, but I feel like I need to have like a little more Star Trek background to appreciate it fully.
There is one episode where I would like to actually show you guys it. It's one where they parodied the movies, so I feel like you do really well.
Is there a musical episode as well?
That was in the Discovery episode.
That was in Strange New Worlds, which I feel like you would also.
Oh man, I've seen clips of that one. It is so fun. Like, even the Vulcan member of the team does a really interesting song interlude.
Oh yeah, Spock.
Yeah, is it Spock?
Yes, Ethan Peck's Spock.
Okay, so it's like his dad or something?
No, Ethan Peck is playing Spock now. He's a younger version of Spock.
Oh. So is it like the original? Is it like, is it supposed to be like the original Spock from the series?
Yes,
isn't Strange New Worlds like Spock is.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find
Strange New Worlds is a prequel to the original series.
Okay.
So this Spock is younger than the Spock that Leonard Nimoy played, which gives him the flexibility to be like, oh, hey, I can try new things. Oh, wait, this doesn't work. And then you can just lead that into why Leonard Nimoy doesn't do it.
Yeah. No joke, Amy. This series, that particular episode is very fun. I've seen clips of it on TikTok and Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh my gosh, somebody put the time into this one. I promise you that. Someone put the time.
Well, I think we're seeing that consistently from Star Trek, like Star Trek people that truly love the franchise that are coming in and going, I want to make something that I would love to see and I want other people to love to see too. And from my brief readings and review of Star Trek, it's Prodigy, not Progeny. So I have to remember not to mess it up. Even them, they're talking about like, we wanted this to be some like a gateway for people to explore Star Trek, but without making them go to young Spock and young Kirk.
Yeah.
And they got it canned. So I'm like, well, that took away my opportunities to do things. Thanks, guys. But
It's interesting because it's like you're looking at Star Trek becoming more and more prominent now that, I mean, and I don't think it was just because of Paramount, but Paramount has been kind of the holder of the new, you know, treasure here, and the efforts being put in with like Picard and Strange New Worlds, you know, Prodigy apparently, and even Lower Decks, like the effort to revitalize new fandoms into this series is really like it's a really strong effort going on. I mean, I know of a bunch of fans of Star Trek who absolutely adored the Picard series, and you know exactly those are the same words they said. Like they were apparently teared up and crying and happy about the way things ended on the series.
I mean, that series was so good. Like that was like movie level quality right there.
Yeah. Well, and if you're bringing people back like the way they did, you would have to. Like, you couldn't do a janky, you know, let's swirl glitter in a jar and make the whole effect go on. Like,
yeah,
like
that's what they did for the first two seasons.
I know. So it's great to see those efforts being done. I just hope they don't run out of fresh ideas, I guess is the best way to say, and kind of just start putting things out for the sake of putting out. Kind of like, speaking of animated series, that series that's on Netflix for Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, which I've heard of it. I've seen clips of it. It's actually supposed to run concurrent to the first Jurassic World film.
Ah,
like it leads up to it. Like it's all that's happening in the series is happening during the time of the events of the first film. But then you remove the parts of it where people are eaten and stuff like that. And yeah, it's not really, you know, it's just, and it turns into like Happy Tree Friends.
Oh,
that's not
good. I like more like Hold Up. They heck it did.
So, but do you foresee any good coming out of whatever's happening with Prodigy, or even think maybe do you think the fandom alone is strong enough to Sonic the Hedgehog this and change the minds of the powers that be to maybe keep it or give it a new second chance?
I'm unsure because I don't even know how serious Paramount themselves are about like, oh, we want to sell it. Because like, what was it? A couple of weeks after that announcement, they put out a trailer for like, not a trailer, but like a sneak peek for season two of the thing that they're not doing. So I'm like, we're mad about it, but like, are you doing it or not? Like,
right.
Like that's kind of, we're in a,
what's your prognosis?
Space. So like, I don't know how serious they are about it, but like, they seem at least clear that like, you know, it's going to get out there somewhere and we're not sure what's going to happen in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's to hoping that good things come about it, because obviously with what we're learning with this fandom and what everyone else is experiencing, and plus not only new fans but fans of old, I'm sure if these shows are as good as you are saying they are, you know, in terms of their performance and what they're giving, you know, as content and context, then I really feel like there's a strong enough push to keep those things holy, or keep those things like safe in the religion of that of the Church of Star Trek, you know. So, but that does bring us, speaking of Star Trek, to our conversation of the evening, and that is going to be thrown into Spencer's court as we dive into our second review for the month of Star Trek month.
So, all right,
that's all you, buddy.
Yeah, we are on our second week. And we're talking about Star Trek 2009, because we don't want to get that confused with Star Trek the motion picture. That's why we always say it here. So, the brash James T. Kirk tries to live up to his father's legacy, with Mr. Spock keeping him in check as a vengeful Romulan from the future creates black holes to destroy the Federation one planet at a time.
There you go.
Directed by J.J. Abrams, the film stars Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Carl Urban, Simon Pegg, Zoe Saldana, John Cho, Anton Yelchin, Eric Bana, and Leonard Nimoy.
Yep.
Simon Pegg did not audition for the role. He simply received an email from J.J. Abrams, which is amazing, asking if he could play the part of Scotty. Pegg said that he would have done it for free or even paid Abrams to be in this film if he had not been offered the role.
Aww. That's really good to hear. I mean, that only just speaks to like the relationship that those two have. For J.J. Abrams to be like, No, we're not casting for this one. Don't worry, I got this handled. I got that's the equivalent of like somebody, you know, in a Mexican family saying, I got someone who can fix that. Don't worry, you got my cousin can fix that. I got you, kind of thing. So that's really cool.
All right, the Korean American actor John Cho was initially uncertain about being cast as the Japanese American officer Hikaru Sulu. But George Takei, who played Sulu on Star Trek 1966, encouraged him to take the role, as Sulu is a character who represents all of Asia.
Yeah.
Which is so true. I mean, you think of all the barriers that George Takei broke down just in taking that initial role. Mm-hmm. I mean, between him And the woman who played Uhura.
Uhura.
Yes. Uhura.
Yeah.
Nichelle Nichols.
Nichelle yes. Nichols, yeah. The fact that they came in and completely started breaking down stereotypes for like specific roles in modern day mainstream cinema and television. I mean, that to get that affirmation from him mm-hmm. must have meant the world to John Cho.
Sure,
like
must.
Easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
to perfect the Vulcan salute from Spock, Zachary Quinto had his fingers glued together by Gigi.
Oh, that is ridiculous.
That alone.
I'm
almost
sorry.
Removes
I'm sorry.
His credibility.
Even
as
George Takei can do it. So, hey.
Well, I mean, he had to have done it in the show. I mean, it's not that difficult as we're holding up our own hands here in the show.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Wait,
what?
You can't.
Try.
Please?
No, you get like this, and then I can't get my pinky to stay
close. Here's...
I use the...
So, here's the thing. So, Spencer obviously has like a floating ring finger here.
He's got a chompy pinky.
So chomp, here's, chomp. And I'm going to be honest, I think a lot of the reason why most people nowadays, or at least our generation, can do it so well,
sound
even
like
if they
an
weren't
old
fans.
Man when you say it like that.
What?
What, people in our old generation?
In our, okay, millennials. The reason why millennials can probably do it so well, even if they're not fans, is because a lot of them pretended to be a Ninja Turtle when they were a kid. And so you had to do the three finger kind of thing.
I also did this one where you would pretend to be like Mickey Mouse.
Now Amy's showing like the Matt Hardy symbol over here, the Jeff Hardy. And just waiting for
the Hardy Brothers. No.
So no, but that's actually.
But he had to glue them. He didn't just use tape. He had to glue his fingers.
Well, I mean, because obviously he had to show that his fingers weren't taped, yeah. So he had to glue the inside.
Oh, you mean on while they were filming?
Oh, you thought this was just at conventions? Like here, glue my fingers really quick.
Glue my.
But he was practicing. So like you know when you're like because of the muscles and the tendons. Mm-hmm.
Spencer doesn't know because he can't do it.
No, but maybe we could. We can rebuild.
We can rebuild.
We can just tape your fingers together.
We're gonna do a Rocky montage of like building the muscle of just your ring finger to stay on one side. Exactly.
All right, so let's get into this review.
Right.
Let's talk about
rudeness.
Let's talk about expectations going into this. Like, have you guys even seen the movie? Like, in
why
theaters?
Are you raising your hand? Nobody can see you do this.
I don't care. I'm
I care because it's like
okay, Amy, have you seen?
Yeah,
it in theaters?
I since
did.
You raised your hand, let's start with you. Go ahead.
I did. I did see this when it came out in 2009, mm-hmm. And I was really excited because at the time I had next to no information about Star Trek, especially the
she still does.
Shush. about the original series, I didn't, like, I vaguely knew, you know, William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, but mostly I'd been brought up on.
You vaguely knew them or you were like, aware of them?
I knew of them and their impact, like who they played in the original Star Trek. But I'm like, okay.
I think
maybe
everybody
just...
knew who William Shatner was.
Oh my gosh.
Like, for real. William Shatner, you were unaware of who he was?
I vaguely knew he was Captain Kirk and that was it. I had no other, like, kind of. Nothing. Like, So, lifetime of Captain Picard and TNG was mm-hmm. fine. So I'm like, oh, maybe this will be like a way for me to learn about, you know, the original series or whatever. And so, yeah, I went and saw it in the theaters.
Nice.
By yourself?
Yeah, actually, now that I think about it.
It didn't sound like she was by herself.
No, now that I think about it, because it was cold and it was Alaska.
She went out with an Eskimo.
No, so, I didn't.
So I'm going to be honest. Mm-hmm. I only saw it the one time and I honestly forgot it completely. Like mm-hmm. I knew it existed and I knew the subsequent follow-up films existed as well. But I think earnestly, I was kind of at an oversaturation point of J.J. Abrams with everything that he was doing, all of his lens flares and everything that he was trying to create. And it just kind of overwhelmed me to a point to where I just was, at the time, I wasn't as nuanced as I am now in terms of discerning what could potentially be something bigger. And I was just more picky then. So I remember seeing it. Like, I remember the event of seeing it, which I went out with friends to go see it. And, yeah, that was it. Like, that was the box was checked, you know. So honestly, the fact that we were going to see that for this week, I was actually kind of excited and slightly kind of mortified that I couldn't remember anything from the first viewing, which is really odd for me because I typically try to do research. I try to go into a film with some prior knowledge, at least remembering parts of what my experiences entail. I got nothing. So this time that we seen it, because we all saw it together.
Oh, did we see it together?
What are you insinuating?
So background.
So can I finish what I'm saying?
No.
So ultimately, seeing it this time was kind of like seeing it for the first time all together with us. So I was excited, but still, I was really surprised at the lack of, I don't know, just knowledge of my first experience coming into this. Like, it was so befuddling to me because, as you guys know me, I don't like coming into a movie without having prior information. I come prepared. I come researched. I come, you know, with as much information in mind as possible. And this one was just, yeah. So.
Well, I think we also need to address that.
Why don't we ask Spencer first his time?
Yeah, but go, Spencer, your first time. Quit trying to run the show. This is not.
Okay, so I remember I saw this time this movie multiple times in the theater because
hey, you're the me in this role.
Yes,
hey, there you go.
Swapped positions.
Swapped.
But no, I was just like, I remember being just like awestruck the first time I saw this movie in the theaters. I was like, oh, it was so good, and like Michael Giacchino did such a great job with just the soundtrack. I was just super into it, so saw it many times in the theater, so I was super jazzed.
I know you said you saw it many times, but like, if you could quantify that, like, did you say at least a dozen
at
times?
At least three, maybe four.
Oh, okay.
It was right after the housing crisis.
Now, was that just in theaters, or are you just talking about overall, like, the entire span from then until now?
Oh, that's just in theaters.
Okay.
I have no idea how many times I've watched this
But you've
movie.
Seen it multiple times.
I've seen it since then, yes.
Okay.
But it's been a while since I've seen it. So I was really happy to see it with you guys.
Yeah. Which was fun. And we've also figured out that anybody that sits next to Spencer when we do a viewing will talk. And this time it wasn't me.
Look, we had some libations. We
had an enthusiastic viewing, which was amazing for Spencer and I to continually watch.
It was great.
As Eddie. Fun. Yeah, it was one of those things I didn't think I was going to ever be able to experience in my life. And it's really cool. What? It's like, it's few and far between where you're actually like engaging with a film that you haven't remembered seeing. And then you're getting mad and talking during the film. You talked so much. It wasn't me.
Well, you know what though? Somebody had to, because I know this one was going to and she was going to stop.
I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't.
No, I know you didn't, but I'm saying if it wasn't me, it probably would have been you.
No. If I was sitting next to Spencer on the couch, maybe.
After the last 10 movies that
we've... Spencer couch.
After the last 10 movies that we've all seen together...
Mostly Sharknado.
9 of them have been you talking through most of it.
I sat next to Spencer.
Without libations.
I sat next to Spencer
without
every
drinks.
Time.
That is true.
So,
Spencer encourages chatting.
I had a few drinks. I enjoyed my time. And I had questions. And I felt, you know, uninhibited to ask, you know, questions throughout the course of it. Amy comes in completely sober with minimal food and just sits down and it's a pause every 5 minutes.
No,
so,
I didn't.
Yeah.
No, don't. No.
So anyway, continue, Spencer, since she's trying to throw me under the table here.
Okay, so let's get into just like first impressions after seeing it this time.
What I'll go first.
Say? Yeah.
Because Amy's probably going to go on forever. So no, my first impression about the film, honestly, I really... really, 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 really hate the person who I was then when I first saw this.
Oh, come on.
Because
be nice.
I really wish I could have remembered everything that happened in this movie, because this was a awesome film. Mm-hmm. Like, watching this movie felt like the first time I saw The Search for Spock. I was watching it, and it just, it was a whole nother level of this generation's Star Trek reborn, so to speak. And it just really gave me a lot of, you know, enthusiasm for the fact that I could see a lot of the things, thanks to Spencer for prior knowledge and prior information given from last year as well as this year. There was a lot more appreciation for all the moments in the film, a lot of the situations that happened. Even I'm not the biggest Chris Pine fan, but I actually appreciated all the subtle Shatnerisms, if you will, that he did in the role. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was like, hey, I know that. And hey, I know what that means. And I know, you know, total Captain America kind of thing. Like, I know that reference kind of thing. And I had a great time with this movie. Nice. I was pleasantly surprised in what my blinders were keeping me from, and at the time when I first saw it, and just whatever oblivious mindset I was in that I didn't really get to really appreciate this the first time I saw it in the theaters. I really wish that I could see it again in theaters, because I just want to see all of that CG goodness and all those starship fights and everything that's going on in the movie mm-hmm. on the big screen. I would have loved to have seen, well, I did see, I would love to re-see this movie on the big screen again, because I had a great time with this movie. So
nice,
what about you, Ames?
Well, I can't gush as much as that because I actually did remember this movie, but I can still say I had such a newfound appreciation for last year's Star Trek month mm-hmm. and then being able to watch this and go, oh my gosh, oh, you're paralleling this, or oh, that's a callback to this, or oh my gosh, I see who you are. And it's not just their interpretation, it's loving care for the people that came before, and it's acknowledging yeah. that they are variations, perhaps, wink, of their oh original gosh. Counterparts. But I really I enjoyed it. I still had a lot of fun. I found ridiculous tiny things to gripe about, but I think
she did. Why wouldn't yeah. she?
But it's I Amy. Brought them up to Spencer, though. We had the conversation about it, which was totally.
Of course she did. Yeah.
Rudeness.
Complaints. Such a good movie. Yeah. I pushed on my glasses. Excuse me. This wasn't correct. And this. Was, yeah, go ahead.
Wow.
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 Wow. But I really had a great time, and it was even more fun that we were all together, and I wasn't the one that was making all of the
otra vez. This. Here she goes again.
So, Spencer, how did you feel after watching it again us?
I think this is the bigger question. This is the bigger question. How do you feel now, pertaining to this viewing and pertaining to seeing it in the setting that we were in? How did you feel after that? Not after just, of course, because you've seen the movie several times.
Yeah.
But what was your first impression as soon as we all finished the film?
I was really happy to just share that with you guys. Because I guess just seeing you guys get really into Star Trek has just been really hyping me up for the whole thing. So I've been super excited about this month. Even though I always have fun when I'm with you guys and we're talking yeah, about sure. stuff.
You're contractually obligated to say that. Go ahead.
You could be an intern and you don't have to be contractually obligated.
All right. So let's move right on to the actors of this story. Oh my gosh. The casting in this movie is actually quite phenomenal.
Yeah.
There's just everyone's everywhere. I'm going to start off with Zachary Quinto. Mm. I liked his interpretation of Spock. It's very different. At this point in time, we now have three. We've got Leonard Nimoy, we've got Zachary Quinto, and we've got Ethan Peck, who's out in Strange New Worlds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he is still doing a version of Spock.
Not to mention the little kid who played him in the beginning of that movie.
Yes.
If we're being specific.
Yeah, he was very good at punching those kids in the face.
Oh, yeah.
Rightfully angry. Deserved
it. Quite angry.
But I liked it. It was something familiar, but also ever so slightly different because yeah. just, new universe, new things going on. So I really liked what he did in this movie.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think Zachary Quinto really brought a refreshing take without having to sacrifice a lot of the great things that you love about Spock in general. It still seemed outside of the name, there were still certain nuances that he did, the way he responded to certain things outside of the norm, outside of whatever you recognize as any Vulcan saying, oh, that is illogical, kind of things like that. Mm-hmm. There were parts of it where you could see they were building what you knew as the existing universe and relationship with Shatner's Kirk and Nimoy's Spock. They were building the foundation for that, and it was interesting seeing how they were going to get from point A to point B, for that. And Zachary Quinto was a really big part of that. It was interesting seeing certain twists on his story, such as the relationship between him and Uhura. And that was actually quite unique. I do have to appreciate Zoe Saldana playing that mm-hmm. role. And giving a lot more importance on her role. Because I don't know if I believe you talked about it last year, how there were certain parts of the series and certain parts of the film that didn't really identify her role as a much more substantial role until this movie came out and made it a point to like her linguistic study and all that kind of stuff that she knew. Like, they really piled on the area of expertise that she was over.
Yeah. Like, for instance, she didn't even have a first name during the original series.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it wasn't until like the movies came along and they were like, oh, yes, Nyota.
Is that why the joke is like, what's your first name, when they meet in the bar and she's like, it's just Uhura? And we're like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's like, I mean, and it's still the running gag through like the first two acts of the film when Kirk's trying to figure out her first name and she doesn't give it. But it's like, that makes a lot of sense because this movie is filled with subtle nods and subtle jokes here and there that we'll get into. But that makes a lot of sense in terms of Kirk just being like, wait, I still haven't gotten your first name. And this is that. So, but she's an absolute, you know, gem in this film as well. Mm-hmm. Next to Zachary Quinto as Uhura. Sorry. And so you have her role playing there, as well as her, I guess, strong-willed and you know, strong-headed kind of persona combating against that of like Kirk, played by Chris Pine, who I thought Chris Pine did a really decent job, surprisingly. Not that I didn't think he could do it, but Shatner is a pretty tall boot to wear.
Yeah, you run the risk of chewing all of the scenery like very easily if you try to match exactly what Shatner's doing.
Yeah.
So like I feel like he did a good job of bringing balance, like familiar stuff, but like, you know, in a different way, because like he's a different character, which makes sense.
Yeah, well, and there was a lot of the subtle nods, as I mentioned earlier, that Chris Pine really was able to nail down, like certain looks that he gave, or even the, like the haughtiness and the cockiness that he held as well, which aren't so much characteristics of Kirk himself, but more so the Shatner-esque part of Kirk.
Yes.
That's part of the interesting element of it. But I really did appreciate his role in bringing that into this new generation, a version of Kirk that everybody could at least jump on board and like to yes. that element. Because obviously we've heard all the rumors about how Shatner was probably the least liked person on those sets and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I think Chris Pine did a well enough job that you could immediately identify Kirk without saying it was specifically, you know, so much of Shatner's mirror image in the scene. What do you think, Ames?
No, I can agree. He gave nuance, again, another where we're seeing consistently across this cast, that not only are they giving nuanced performances, but they're still maintaining a sense of self. And all the tips of the hat aren't too much, especially with Chris Pine. Like, you were seeing, like, hand slaps on the shoulders on particular people, and we're like, okay, that was very, very Shatner. But it didn't feel completely outside of something that Chris Pine might do. And to be very honest, Chris Pine is not my favorite Chris of all the Chris's, and that's okay. But it didn't make him, like, I could still watch him in this and have a good time.
Yeah.
Well, we have another Chris coming up in this movie.
Yes, we do.
I also have to appreciate, kind of like what Man of Steel did, it kind of gave a precedent to Kirk, Jim Kirk being the man who he was trying to be without laying it on too heavy. Like in the series, or at least just in the films from my knowledge, I wasn't really aware of a lot of any kind of past trauma or anything that kind of pushed him to be the person he was. And in fact, they do mention in the film how in Leonard Nimoy's time, you know, through that time jump, that his Kirk, his father saw him become captain of a ship. And in Kirk's Chris Pine's Kirk, you know, you have the catalyst for how he is and his behavior and everything based on the fact that he never got to know his father because his father was killed in a space attack, essentially.
In action.
While in action, yeah. And I love the fact that they put that scene in there to create that recognition that not all people are just like their paths are just laid before them, that this Kirk is dealing with things that are probably unresolved, and he's just kind of this wild cannon who has so much potential within him. I really did appreciate that part. And Chris Pine really created that troubled persona with a drive to become more than just whatever everyone else wants to be in that world. Like, he just wants to be his own person, you know, and that was really well played out by Chris Pine.
Mm. Well, and I think the catalyst for that was really Chris Hemsworth.
You mean Chris Hemsworth?
I say Hemsworth, but it's Hemsworth. I know. I'm wrong. It's okay. You're wrong. He's okay. And again, still not my favorite Chris, but the opening for this film,
because she likes Chris Pratt. We all know that.
I like Chris Evans.
Oh. I like, you know, there's a boss. You're like, what's the right last name?
Not Pratt. I'm out of Pratt. Usually everyone just goes by last names. They're all Chris's. But Chris Hemsworth, the opening for this movie is really like kind of kicking the nuggets. It takes you by surprise. It drops you right into the middle of a conflict. We're going on like everything's la-di-da-di everybody. And then, you know, it's very that everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked, like type of vibes. You don't expect that when you're a kid watching Avatar, and you do not expect that from the jump of this movie. And I love that it is still one of the like the biggest moments that I remember. Even coming back into this, I was like, oh man, I forgot about, didn't fully forget about it, but I didn't think I was going to feel as much in those moments watching what happens with the USS Kelvin and with George Kirk, Lieutenant George Kirk, in his 12 minutes as captain, and what he does
which
to save it.
Which was really funny, because when that scene happened, Amy immediately asked for a pause and said, so does that make him the captain with the shortest career time? And I'm like, you mean from the time his captain died and then he died? But it was like,
I don't know.
What?
That could have been somebody else. What? It's Star Trek lore.
Who asked that question? Somebody just died and says, so did he win? Like, what kind of question is that?
It's a question for somebody who understands that the Spencer has a very expansive, much like the universe, a very expansive knowledge of Star
and yet
Trek.
She just said that was a very emotional scene and whatnot, and then she goes, so does that make him the shortest captain for career?
It wasn't like, immediately.
It was immediately.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, because I think if we're taking what I know, I think the next shortest person is Commander Riker.
Really?
Because he got to be captain for an episode and some change. Back when they thought Picard was out of the picture permanently.
See, there, Spencer has answers for me.
Yeah, but it's not important to the story. Okay. Yeah, not to the story. So, it's like somebody just died for their honor, and you're like, so does that make him a short captain? Or just, it's like, come on. Really?
Really? You're going to be mean to me on that. But yes, Chris Hemsworth did a great job. I love how this started out. And in record time, too, I have to say.
She's still going. She's still going. She's still going with that.
Well, I have somebody else that I wanted to bring up, and turns out to be, I guess, canonically the youngest person on the crew of the Enterprise with Chekhov, because he's what? He's 19?
Yes, I believe they said he was 19.
Yeah, and it's Anton Yelchin played in this role, because it was Koenig.
Walter Koenig, yes.
Yes, I remembered some of it.
Good, good job.
Who I absolutely adored.
Man, teacher's pet over here.
Oh my gosh.
Keep going.
Yeah. Wow.
But I absolutely enjoyed.
teacher, I know things.
I absolutely enjoyed Chekhov from the original movies. He was so much
fun. She's just like making fun of his accent.
No,
that's
because
that's all she did throughout the entire movie.
No, I didn't.
Nuclear vessels. And it's like, okay.
Sweet.
It was like, that was the only thing she was focused on.
No, because in the second Star Trek movie,
we're not watching.
I talked about them spacesuits. So don't get at me on that.
What?
Yeah, you need to listen to last year's episodes. So... Anyways. Anton Yelchin, who is just heart and soul of Chekhov in this, was so wonderful to watch. It's a, like, R.I.P. Anton Yelchin. But in this, he has so much youthful energy, and it's such a delight to see him from when we get to the point where he's like, I can do it. I can lock on and get them, you know, through the because he's doing he runs to the transporter room. He like literally ditches the bridge and just runs. And I'm like, yeah, I'd do that too, buddy. Like, and it's fun. And then also his interaction, his very small interaction with Pike, it was very good too. And I like Anton Yelchin. What are you going to say about that?
Eddie. He was all right. I here's the problem.
Oh, there's a problem.
I get it. It was a product of the 70s to make him sound like that. But I don't know about perpetuating that to this modern film. It's like we updated everything else except for the man who has the incorrect Russian accent.
You mean that the reason that it was
an article? Oh, is this more reading teacher's
pet? Yeah, because an article I was reading that said that they put in Chekhov was to acknowledge that the Russians were the first ones to space. And that's why he was there.
So they
there.
Couldn't have given him an actual Russian accent and not a fake? Like, I don't, really messed up?
I don't know because, what, is an Anton Yelchin Jewish and Ukrainian?
You're a teacher's pet. You should have that somewhere on hand.
I do appreciate
Anton Yelchin's energy in the film. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really did bring a lot of up, you know, really picked up energy, especially in some of those bigger scenes between him and Simon Pegg. They both created a lot of that sense of urgency just because of the way they were, their motor mouth, the way they just ran words.
Was Russian, so he's Russian Jewish. Yay for me.
So he dishonored his family and he died. Got it. I just feel like with everything else that they've updated for this film or everything else they made attempts to, that could have been one of the things that they really could have sidestepped to create more of the effect that they were trying to go for, which apparently, according to, you know, front row seater over here, you know, we were supposed to see the, I guess, diversity of it with the fact that the inclusion of him being Russian was supposed to mean something.
It meant a lot more in the original series than it would now because that's 1960s and the Cold War, and that makes like a lot more sense why that's a really big deal then.
Well, and then and it makes sense then because of the fact that you have a American character, Walter Koenig was American, playing a caricature of a Russian whom, yes, they're showing the inclusion of that, but they're also making fun of it at the same time.
Okay.
Because the Russians were ultimately the enemy at the time. So it would make sense that was the... I'm not saying that's the actual mindset. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that could have been. So moving forward, maybe, you know, give him a proper Russian accent?
So here's what I will say. Not that I'm trying to make excuses for people, but Star Trek has always been bad with people and their accents. Because I don't know if you knew this, but Patrick Stewart plays Jean-Luc Picard, a Frenchman, mm-hmm. and he does not sound French in the slightest.
Oh, 100%. No.
Especially when, like, he began to say something in French and people were like, no, dude.
Yeah, just stop. Just stop. Go back to Shakespeare. I feel like that was, and I'm surprised that we got into this point so quickly, but I think in talking about Anton Yelchin's character, yes, he's a great actor. He's a great performer. I just feel like that seemed a little heavy-handed in the fan service area, but somebody who I feel who has an accent and actually did a really good job as an American character was Carl Urban's character in the role of Bones, or what's his full name?
McCoy.
Leonard McCoy.
Leonard McCoy. I feel like Carl Urban did a great job.
Like, freaking Carl Urban. Freaking Carl Urban.
Look, we don't have a bucket of water to cool you down, so relax.
Because of all the people in this one. Sorry, Chris Pine. Hello, Carl Urban.
Amy was just like sweating. She was, I got the vapors while we were watching the movie. So it's like.
Saints alive. My goodness.
But Carl Urban is such a great actor. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen him in everything from Lord of the Rings all the way to horror films like Ghost Ship and in the common, more modern series of The Boys.
And Judge Dredd.
Dredd. Calm down over there. The way she said, she could have said, and Judge Dredd. She's like, and Judge Dredd.
Well, oh, the other thing God. Is like, the first thing I ever Someone saw get that the man hose. In. The first thing I saw him in was Xena. So I was like,
he's in Xena?
Yes.
He plays Julius Caesar.
He plays Julius Caesar, and it's a what? Very young Carl Urban. I'm going to find it. Somebody else talk.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. No, you talk. I can look it up. It's
no,
fine.
Because
it's fine.
I cut off Eddie, and he's all like, she's got the vapors.
Yeah, Carl no, Urban. It was true. We couldn't get through there without her, like, oh, like, to make a noise. I'm like, okay, we're going to have to pause this movie and take an outside break.
You also said, you're like, okay, I really like this Bones. Like,
yeah,
repeatedly.
I like the character. I'm not over here swooning over the man. But I feel like, oh, there she's showing you.
I forgot. He also played Cupid.
Yeah, I just found that out. That is a very interesting wing pack he's got on his back.
But I feel like Carl Urban has proven himself to be a very well-rounded performer. He's been able to do everything from English accents to American accents to his own native, is he New Zealand or I think he's Australian, his Australian accent. And every time it comes out great. And he is such a commanding presence. It would make sense for somebody who is as much a, I guess, rebel on the ship as Spock, as not Spock, as Kirk.
He's a Kiwi.
Oh, he's from New Zealand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As much as somebody who like rebels as much as Kirk in the original series with, what's his name? I forgot his name. The guy who played originally for Bones.
DeForest Kelly.
DeForest Kelly, yeah. As much as he was such a unique presence, Carl Urban brings that same exact presence in this one, and it just works so well. You know, I had to say, you know, I appreciated his role in this one, and it wasn't like a kind of cheesy, campy version of Bones. It was like he was a legitimate doctor, and he had all the same like bad habits or just, you know, are you out of your Vulcan mind kind of thing. Like all those moments were just so great. Like, my God, I'm a doctor, not a physicist. It's like all those moments were just perfectly timed and really well done.
Yeah. He really did understand the assignment when it came to this. So
without
like,
a doubt.
Yeah. I was very happy with like just watching him on screen.
Are you still looking at pictures of Carl Urban over there?
Probably.
Yeah.
last
nobody
person,
can see me.
the last person that I want to highlight is Leonard Nimoy himself.
Yes, please.
When the first time I watched this, because I remember this, like when you just hear him say James T. Kirk, and you're like, he's back. Like, I was so excited to hear him. And especially with his famous line, like, I have been and always shall be your friend.
Aww. Oh, my gosh.
Always hits you right in the feels.
And this goes back to, like, my first viewing. Mm-hmm. Because of the lack of knowledge, because of the lack of, like, the awareness of memes and whatnot. And I wasn't into Star Trek at all at the time because it was, like, a family thing. They watched TNG. Watching it now, that scene hits so much harder than I originally saw it because, and I think I had explained it when we were watching it the first time, the fact that you have somebody who in his lifetime with Leonard Nimoy has seen the death of his friend, where his friend had actually seen the death of Spock and then Spock reemerged. And then as they grew older together, he was there when Kirk died. And has not seen Kirk since however long. And we come to this, and he sees his friend in his youthful form once more. And as much as he would probably want to be on the emotional side of seeing him, he says the one thing that exudes all emotion within the Star Trek universe that means so much to not only himself, but he knows that those words mean the absolute universe to Kirk. And it not only just breaks you because this man is seeing his friend come back from the dead for the first time in no matter how long, however how long, and he uses those words to greet him. And it's like, my God, like that is just, that's great writing right there. Like that's what you want to see with these Star Trek movies. And that moment is so pivotal for anybody. Like, and mind you, it might be because like I'm such a youngin in terms of the Star Trek fandom, but everything that we've experienced up until this point has just built this, you know, fascination and attraction and just love for this, you know, this universe and both universes that have been made essentially with, you know, TNG and TOS. It creates those connective synapses in your mind where you're like, oh yeah, that and that happened and that happened and this. And you come to a moment like this in this new generation of Star Trek and the one line from someone who unfortunately is no longer here. Leonard Nimoy did pass away.
Yeah.
But to hear him say that iconic line to our new Kirk, it should shatter every doubt in your mind that these Star Trek films are going to go or the, at least this film is going to mm-hmm. go south in terms of the furtherment from that scene on. So,
yeah. I think that summed it up for all of us pretty much.
But I did want to say one more person, and we haven't really highlighted him, but Eric Bana as Nero. I mean, I've seen Eric Bana in a lot of different things. He's been in a lot of indie films. He was in one Hulk film, which wasn't great. But he's got nuance, and he does have, you know, range. Seeing him in this as a Romulan, as just a bad guy, was so much fun that I didn't even recognize him until you mentioned, like, oh, that's Eric Bana. And I'm like, that's Eric Bana? What?
Yeah.
They shaved his head? He had a nice head of hair.
But we also messed up in that, because I was like, I mentioned, I was like, isn't that Christian Bale? And you both stopped. And I was like, oh, wait, no, it's Eric. What's his face? And you're like, yeah, it's Eric Bana. And he loses.
Yeah. How do you confuse Christian Bale with Eric Bana?
Because they are two
completely separate people, not even on the same playing field.
But it was like, great to get it was, more excited. It was when you so it was
ridiculous to say, like, oh, it's Christian Bale. Like, no.
I questioned it. Like, I didn't think it. I was like, it's Eric, what's his face?
I was like, that makes no sense at all.
It did in my head.
No, it did not. How did that make sense in your head?
It just did. It just
I can't.
But Eric Bana delighted you.
Yeah, well, yeah, and then that statement frustrated me in the same sentence. But yeah, I appreciated Eric Bana in his role. In this role, you don't see him play a lot of villains. And I really did see him have fun with this role. You could see kind of like him tapping into like the menace side of his performance and whatnot. So I really did appreciate it. I mean, for every great hero, you got to have a great villain. And I don't think he was great, but I think he had fun, and his fun translated on screen. He might not be the best Romulan, you know, villain to come about from the entire franchise of, you know, Star Trek. But in this one, I thought he did well enough to give me entertainment. So.
Cool.
Yay.
Okay, so let's get into the story. story starts off on the USS Kelvin. And it's orbiting a star, and there is a distortion in the distance, and a Romulan ship, Eric Bana's Nero ship, comes out of it and just starts attacking the Federation ship.
Yep.
Chris Hemsworth. See, now you've got me saying Chris Pratt.
You can't say Thor. Chris Pratt. You're going to get her excited again. Oh. See, stop.
Ew.
So Thor, he's in charge of the Kelvin for the next 12 minutes, and he makes the most of it by saving as much of the crew as he can.
Including his wife.
Yes, and who was about to give birth, and actually is giving birth in the process of them evacuating the ship. And just rams his ship right into Nero's ship and just, like, lets everyone get away. And you know what? Really impressive 12 minutes for being a captain of saving, like, most of the people on your ship.
Yep.
So we flash forward to the future. We've got a new version of James T. Kirk just stealing cars and being a menace in Iowa.
Yep. in Iowa.
Yeah, he's an Iowan. Yeah, so they flash forward again, and now he's closer to an adult age. I don't know how old he is, really.
Probably young 20s, who knows?
Yeah, and so doesn't seem like he's doing much with his life except getting into bar fights and then also talking to other main cast characters like Uhura. And here's where he meets Bruce Greenwood's Captain Pike. Mm-hmm. He is the one who gets him into Starfleet by just, like, you know, telling him about how great his dad was and just, like, walking him through the steps of, like, you know, what are you doing? And, like, you could be in the captain's chair if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
And so that is enough to send Kirk off to Starfleet Academy, where we finally see him do his Kobayashi Maru test.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a great callback to when Admiral Kirk, I believe, at the time was judging someone else's Kobayashi Maru test. In this version, you still got him eating that apple.
Which that was Search for Spock. Because they're bringing that new person on board that was supposed to be played by someone else.
Savick.
And she was changed by someone. The actress changed for that particular role, I believe. Could be wrong.
Yeah, no, this would have been Wrath of Khan. Because
it had to be Wrath. Yeah, it had to be Wrath of Khan, I thought.
Yeah, because they switched to the new person in 3 because we were dealing with whales in 4.
Yeah, whales.
Oh, yeah, Wrath of Khan. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Yeah, so it was very interesting to see the actual test and the way he cheated through it.
Yeah.
I mean, he finagled it.
By cheating. But, like,
there was, the tribunal was not conclusive.
Mostly because it got interrupted. Although, like, even though, like, this is like a slightly different federation, you have to imagine roughly the same thing must have happened. Maybe.
Yeah.
But, like, very interesting.
Oh, which, by the way, the Savik that we didn't like was the Christie Alley one.
Yes.
Christie Alley.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember.
R.I.P.
Oh, my gosh. Wait,
she died?
Yeah, she died already.
I forgot about that.
I forgot about that.
It was like last year or the year before.
I think we forgot about that, Spencer.
Yeah, apparently.
But anyway.
December 5th, 2022.
Dang.
Told you.
All right. So they do bring him to courts with Tyler Perry. Which, here's the thing about this movie. I am constantly shocked by like how many people I recognize that are not in the main cast. Because you have just Tyler Perry in this movie. You have Winona Ryder playing Spock's mom, Amanda.
She looks very dowdy.
Which I was like, I don't even remember her being in this film at all, like the first time I watched it. But yeah, I was just very interested in like all the side characters. But I guess that's how it works when like, you know, people take on bigger roles later on.
True.
Okay, so from here, we've got Tribunal. And then there is an attack on, Vulcan. Vulcan.
The Vulcan, yes. Yeah.
Because I was like, there was a prison colony thing going on. That was something different. so everyone warps out of there, except for the Enterprise, which now has.
You did skip over a really important fact of that. The Kobayashi Maru test was, in this universe, developed by Spock.
Mm.
Which is interesting because the court hearing is both Kirk facing off against Spock in terms of his cheating and Spock's pride in his test being beaten. So that kind of starts laying out the woodwork for their butting head, so to speak, for the rest of the film.
Yeah, very true. So from here, you have to have Bones smuggle Kirk onto the Enterprise because they're still in the middle of a trial, and even though there's an emergency, he's been unassigned, which I feel is kind of a weird thing to do, especially with someone who's not been found guilty of anything yet, even though he might be leaning that way. Mm. But, like, I know, I mean, they're still in, like, the U.S. region, so I feel like they should have just been like
a little wibbly wobbly space.
Yeah.
Or they could have just put him in jail to really kind of just take care of everything.
Yeah, but like in emergency, do you really want like putting people who at least know what they're doing?
Hey, maybe the government got better and realized drafting people isn't always the best idea.
He signed up for Starfleet.
And then got in trouble.
I mean, maybe. Okay, so like Bones is just injecting him with stuff so that it makes it look like, oh, this guy's sick. He has to come with me.
I'm his doctor.
Just like that?
Just like that.
I'm his doctor. Let me take him aboard. I'm his doctor. That's really what sold Carl Urban's Bones for me.
His really bad New York accent.
I got to bring him on board. I'm his doctor.
That is like, what is that? His Ray Romano accent or something?
Okay, so now that we got most of our main cast on board, when they go to warp off, Sulu apparently does not know how to actually disengage the inertial dampeners and keeps
them
in place.
Turn off the parking brake.
Yeah, basically. Which they find out saves their lives.
Yes!
Yeah.
Sulu being the real hero here. Come on.
Yes, sometimes what you need is just a little incompetence.
Just a smidge. just a sprinkle.
That's why we have Amy on.
Wow.
Okay, I'm done. I hit my quota.
I think you went way over your quota.
You got that SpongeBob fish look when they opened their mouth.
I don't know why you kept going. That was the wrong move. Hey,
keep
Amy.
Keep talking, Spencer.
I appreciate you, Amy.
this is why I'm an ensign.
Okay, oh, so good. About the planet Vulcan, you have the reappearance of Nero's ship after 25 years. And so I also want to point out, this is Nero's ship is the main reason that makes this universe different from the last one. Basically, he came, he attacked one ship, nobody knows anything about him, mm-hmm. and like that just freaked out Starfleet. Like, that's not normally what happens. Normally, they can talk to people, or even if they can't talk to them, they're like, oh, they're these people, they belong over there. Like, they have a vague idea of who is doing what, right?
Yeah.
But with Nero's ship, they know nothing. Yeah. And like, they don't get anyone claiming responsibility. It just was an attack, and they don't know. It could happen again. So like, this whole thing kind of causes Starfleet to shift to be slightly more militaristic than their prime universe counterpart, because the new version of the Enterprise is a bit more heavy weapons,
like more artillery.
Yeah,
I did notice that, because it did seem previous to this one, the ships were more for discovery or just space travel in general with someone at the helm, following the like the military hierarchy. This, it seemed like they needed to be mindful of like their weapons and whatnot, and then they were just even in the ship battles and whatever, they seemed to have a little bit more artillery going on, or that could have been just the CG. But
yeah, I mean, it's a good excuse for more heavy space battles, but like, it works great for just like a storytelling perspective of why this ship is bigger than the original and like has more firepower than the original one does.
Now, you did mention that 25 years later, the ship comes back. They've been just floating around for 25 years. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah.
That's what they explain too.
Yes. In the movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because basically Nero was basically repairing his ship from being crashed into by the Kelvin, and then also trying to figure out what the heck happened to Spock.
Which nobody could figure out what happened to Spock.
So, yes, we'll save that for later. But so that puts him at a standoff between the Enterprise and Nero's ship. He basically is like, hey, send your captain over, kind of what he did with the Kelvin, so that he could basically get information out of the captain and then try to destroy the Enterprise.
Yeah.
But at this point, they know it's up. And so they're basically able to like get into like a thing where like, as they're sending over their captain, you have like this whole actually really interesting space jump with Kirk, Sulu, and an unnamed red shirt, which I'm very glad that they kept unnamed red shirt as a thing that happens.
No, yeah, you're right. He was unnamed red shirt. I was like, later on,
there is a name for that person.
There's a vague name for Red Shirt, but Red Shirt's name is very quickly dispelled.
Yeah, like
in a blaze of flaming glory.
I forgot. Well, that's because Red Shirt was dumb. He's like, oh, I can get closer. What?
I thought his name was George, to be very honest.
You thought his name was George?
Yeah.
I mean, that was Kirk's dad's name.
I know, but that's where I was like, I can't remember off the top of my head, but he went out in a blaze of flame and glory.
I'm thinking it's not George, because literally just make that up. Thing where Kirk is like, I keep losing George's. Yes, they're trying to land on the drilling platform from Nero's ship so that they can disable its transporter block and sensor block for the whole planet below of Vulcan. They're able to do this, but then Nero is also able to inject the red matter he got from Ambassador Spock's ship. So we have two Spocks. We have Ambassador Spock, and then we have younger Spock, which will definitely not get confusing later on.
Nope.
No.
So they inject the red matter. One of the reasons why this is even happening to begin with is that Spock was trying to save Romulus from their exploding star. So they had to make red matter to like collapse it into like a black hole. Whole bunch of sciencey stuff. But I do actually want to throw in a tidbit of like background information.
Okay.
One of the reasons why Nero is so mad at the Federation is not just because of this whole like you let our star explode thing. It's also because the Federation didn't do anything to help, really. They said they were going to help, and then they didn't. Because there was this whole robot uprising that happened where they were trying to build a whole bunch of ships to go help out the Romulans. Mm-hmm. And because they were dealing with this whole thing and they lost a whole bunch of ships that were trying to help them, they were just like, yeah, we can't do anything with this. Oh, so no. It was kind of a broken promise thing for Nero 2. That's in another thing. That's why that's not part of this
movie. I was going to say, where's that information from?
Star Trek Picard Season 1.
Oh. You catch that, Amy?
Yes. Season 1.
Okay, so that's it. So this goes back to what you were saying last week where... Picard, the series Picard is actually writing a lot of the confusing parts of previous films and so forth.
Yeah, that's you know how things works. It's like, oh, that doesn't make sense. Let's try to fix it later on.
Yeah.
Picard and Discovery kind of like finish off like a lot of what's happening in the Prime Universe post where this movie is taking place.
Okay, got it.
So from here, the planet is on the verge of having a black hole form in it. So it's time to get as many people off as they can. And it's down to 10 people because that's all the people that can get off at this time. So Spock beams down and tries to get the Council of Elders, I believe it is, along with his mother and father who are there at the same time. Because I guess their transporters are not as good as they are in the future. they kind of lose the pattern lock on his mother, and she just falls to her death, and she dies. Mm. But they
Winona
get
everyone Ryder, else. Go bye-bye.
Cool, bye-bye.
Yeah, she's dead.
She hecka dead. There's no way coming back on that one.
Moving on from there, you've got...
So essentially, they're able to get away at that point in time. And then in the course of that, Spock and Kirk get into an argument as to what they should do next. Spock being more logical, as well as dealing with his mother's death. Kirk being more combative, wanting to fight against the enemy. Spock, who is now the acting captain, decides to disembark Kirk from the ship since he got combative.
Okay, which is the craziest thing ever.
Yeah.
That's still like a why? Like I
can you imagine on like a road trip with your children and you're like, that's it. Pull over at this rest stop. Jimmy's getting out of the car. He's going to wait here. We're going to put him in a locker. We'll be back for him when he's ready to listen. It's like, no, you can't do that.
Now you can't. Your parents didn't leave me
in the car?
I'm
sorry, now you can't? At any point in time, did that happen to you?
They just left me in the car.
That explains a lot. Why would they leave you in the car?
Because they were sick of me asking questions. Much like this.
I'm not kidding. You're just lobbing them up in the air, softballing them to me, and I'm just like, and there you go. Nothing.
I mean, you could always just not hit them.
Yeah, but they're coming. But it is. It's a confusing thing to just drop somebody off on a planet where there's one outpost somewhere, and it's obviously not really near where he lands because they just like, boomf, and like send him out like a Nerf gun.
Yeah, no, like it's so wildly irresponsible. I think that they were trying to use this as the first sign of like, hey, Spock is not okay.
Yeah, no.
Like, they have a brig. they could just have stored him down there and he would have been just perfectly fine.
Yeah, especially if this is a more militaristic type vessel. They definitely would have had a brig. I'm sorry, a militaristic type vessel. There you go. Just making sure we're staying on terms. Hi.
So anyway, this is where Leonard Nimoy enters the film with his poignant conversation with a younger Kirk about how he needs to get back to the Enterprise, and basically sends him on his way to meet Scotty,
mm-hmm.
who's played by Simon Pegg. And from here, you've got Ambassador Spock, who basically gives Scotty his own formula for transporting onto a moving ship. And they are able to get back onto the Enterprise with, like, you know, limited interruption. From here, you've got basically Kirk and Spock working out their differences by mm-hmm. punching each other in the face, which On brand for Kirk, not so much for Spock, but it works.
I mean, regarding everything that's going on and whatnot, yeah. I mean, the whole idea of it is that then Spock tells this now Kirk to get him to understand that he's too emotional. He can't be captain. He needs to be captain in order for him to survive this. So,
yeah.
And so he does by insinuating that Spock, new Spock, has no feelings towards the loss of his mother, sending him into a blind rage and then realizing he's unfit for duty and he resigns and makes Kirk the next one as he was made first captain before Bruce Greenwood's captain left the ship to go Pike. As an ambassador.
Yes.
Commander Pike.
Or yeah.
Captain Pike.
So from here, we have all of our main cast finally on the ship together. So they basically come up with a plan to take out Nero and save Earth from being the next black hole place.
True.
Which his main goal is to basically take out everyone in the Federation so that like Romulus can just reign supreme and blah, blah, blah. Standard Romulan nonsense plot.
Yep.
But then they don't have a home.
You're talking about the Romulans? Mm. They don't have a home in the Prime universe, yes.
Yes.
And in the present universe, they're still...
in this one, do you think really those Romulans would accept Eric Bana? As Eddie pointed out, he looks just like a gang member.
I mean, to be honest, he did kind of look like, you know, Tom Hardy in that last movie.
You pointed that out aggressively.
Like, he did. All he was missing was just a little bit of the tattoos. Tom Hardy was missing the tattoos, but they were... we're essentially looking like the same people.
Yeah. No, the Romulans would definitely take him in because he's got an advanced ship and they would very much would be
like
interested.
Yeah, that bad boy was massive. Mm-hmm. Like, and it had like wings that came out. And
it's a mining ship too.
Yeah,
it's not even a military.
Nope. He's like, we just retrofitted it with a bigger laser. And you're like, what? Where did you? Okay. Laser.
Yeah. So, he'd be fine. So let's get into highlights and issues. I want to know, do you guys have any highlights, issues with this movie? Let's start with you, Amy.
The one ridiculous issue that I have, because it is ridiculous, is the fact that when we were watching this, I realized that they shaved Zachary.
Oh my god!
Eyebrows to go halvesies to give him the up angle for the Vulcan eyebrow, and instead of just waxing that chunk to get it smooth or at least covering it up, you could see all the little pinholes from where they had razored it down and didn't take the care to cover it up, so you could see all the little follicle holes that were full of little hairs still. And I was just like, mm-mm.
I mean,
and
maybe,
then we had a conversation when he went to the bathroom. Sorry, Eddie, you missed this. Spencer and I had a conversation about the ways that we could have correctly.
You guys literally talked about manscaping this guy?
Yes.
Yeah. For the sake of film. Because in juxtaposition, Leonard Nimoy didn't have that problem.
I'm pretty sure he's done it long enough to where his eyebrows naturally now just do that. Like, you could take a piece of latex and then go over and then redo that.
You could have blocked out an eyebrow, but nobody did on this man. And come on.
I think also, like, can you imagine if they shaved Zachary Quinto's eyebrows, how much bushier they would have came in? Like, he would have gotten no roles after that.
But
it would have looked
like,
you know,
they shaved
Groucho
half
Marx
of an eyebrow. They shaved half an eyebrow for this guy to do this instead of the full thing or even blocking it out. So my big one really dumb complaint was the eyebrow issue for this entire movie.
I mean, from a perspective of somebody who is mindful of that kind of thing, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even see it. Mm-hmm. And obviously you guys didn't talk to me about it.
No, we went to the bathroom.
Was there any highlights?
Well, I said the opening sequence was an absolute brilliant highlight, not only in storytelling, but in acting as well. And the fun fact that we got from Eddie on the map painting of the Enterprise, which was a nice highlight, not only in the way that Eddie exuberantly explained that he found this out second hand, but also that you had us pause it so that you could talk about all the ins and outs of it.
Well, okay,
which added to the viewing experience where I was like, oh, that's even cooler than I thought it was going to be.
Well, because of the fact that, like, okay, I came into this film without any prior knowledge or whatnot, which is, it's fine because of the fact that I didn't see this movie or watch, like, something specifically toward it. It happened to be one of those Corridor Crew episodes where they talk about VFX artists react. Mm. And they sat down with the actual guy who did the VFX for that particular film. And they talked about how the guy mentioned they were trying to explain like, oh, did you do this and that? He goes, actually, that's just a matte painting. That's just a matte painting, and all the other things that were like the small CG things that were there, like the smoke or the small people, those were all put in after the fact. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. That's like a fun little thing where if you're looking at homages to the way things were done back then, that's a great homage because that's a very, it looks like a very busy scene.
Yeah.
Where it's the scene that's in the trailer as well, where Kirk rolls up to where the, you know, ships are being built and whatnot, and he looks up from his motorcycle and he sees all this just huge array of ships that are being built. And the fact that that is just someone who put in the artistry to create that, it's just, it was a really fun fact that I had to share.
Yeah. And it made it actually really enjoyable, and it was another highlight. And then the last one that I have, the guy who played the original Scotty, James Doohan.
James Doohan.
So, fun random tidbitty fact is that Simon Pegg's assistant is actually his son.
Oh, so his assistant in this movie or just in general his assistant?
No, in this movie. So, the guy that keeps yelling for him to get down off of things, it's actually James Doohan's son. So, oh, I thought that was cool. I thought that was a really kind of neat under the radar tidbit, but also he's one of those fun.
Wait. Hold on. Are you talking about that thorny looking character? That's his son or his grandson?
His son.
Whose son?
James Doohan's son. That's what the internet told me.
Oh.
Yeah. And also, I appreciate because the random, not the randomness of his character, but the literal, like, Simon Pegg's Scotty just keeps yelling at him to get down from things. It's not a jungle gym. Just get down. Stop doing that. No, you can't have those snacks. You eat, and all you eat is a bean, and you're full. And I'm just like, I kind of love you for being who you are. By the way, I found out the red shirt's name is Chief Engineer Olsen from earlier.
Yes.
Hence why we would need a Scotty.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Yeah. But those are my highlights and my one issue. Ha-cha-cha.
All right, what about you, Ed?
I'm still looking up this thing because it says it's somebody named Deep Roy.
That could be.
Oh, Deep Roy is the guy who played all the Oompa Loompas in the Johnny Depp.
So, but then why did they say that it was his son?
I also saw that as well.
Right?
I was like curious about what they meant specifically because I can't remember if he talked or anything.
No, not really. But Deep Roy, yeah, now I remember from the, he was the new Oompa Loompa in the Johnny Depp one, which he was very expressive as well. So
interesting. I've already mentioned some of my issues with, honestly, it's just really the accent thing. I just didn't really think, I mean, for real, I didn't think that it was necessary. I mean, I could get behind the mentality slightly behind fan service and making the efforts to create that connection with Walter Koenig's character. But I don't know. It's kind of a loose connection for me. Highlights, however, I have to say one of the biggest highlights for me for this film had to be, and this is just me kind of piggybacking on Amy's thing, that opening scene in the film with Chris Hemsworth. With Chris Hemsworth, you know, behind the helm for the ship, that entire just star battle really sets the tone for what you're going to expect in this film, because it doesn't look like, nobody knew coming into this film that this movie was going to be as, I guess, combative or like because of the fact that if you've watched everything prior to, it's usually like swoops here and pew, 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 or swoops there and then disappearing cloaking device and then this is not like, there's a lot of that. Yeah. You get to this one and it is straight up like World War II, like battleships going at each other, and it's just, and it's intense. And I don't think I really expected it to be that intense right from the get-go. On top of the story that's being developed in that moment as well, you got this crazy setup of someone trying to hail somebody, no answer. They send their captain after they're finally hailed. The captain gets killed right away. And they're just like pew-pewing each other and they're shooting and then things are exploding and there's this meaningful conversation he has from the bridge to his wife as they're having the baby and as she's having the baby and blah, blah, blah. And then like that whole thing just really kind of throws you to this mindset of like, I don't think this is going to be like any Star Trek film I've ever seen. So, yeah. What about you, Spence?
Actually, I'm going to piggyback off what you said. Yeah, it's not like any of the other ones.
No.
But I feel like that's actually the main strength of this movie, is that it's so different. It's so different, and it smartly writes its story in a way that it makes sense why it's so different to begin with.
Yeah.
So, like, just really well done. For me, let's go with a highlight. I'm going to mention him again, Michael Giacchino, and his score.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because honestly, there's like a lot of bangers in the soundtrack. From just like the opening theme to the end credits theme, which we played on the episode. And then also Enterprising Young Men when like they first see the Enterprise. Like that one's a really good one too. It's just a really good cohesive score. It's actually really one of my favorite Star Trek scores, like right next to First Contact for me. But yeah, it's really well done. I'm going to say I don't actually have any real issues with this movie. Like, especially when the previous movie is Nemesis, and that's both like, you know, for us on this podcast and in reality.
Yeah.
Like, when you start with that and you come into this, like, you're not complaining nearly as much.
No.
Just because of, like, you know, what was has happened.
Like, to be honest, out of the entire film, my gripe is so minimal that it's like, I mean, I could look past it and still enjoy the film.
Yeah.
There was nothing major about this movie that I looked and said, oh, no, they can't really be doing that. Or, mm-hmm. No, that's just ridiculous. Oh, are you serious? Like, there was nothing like that. This movie set a solid foundation for this series, this universe for Star Trek. So,
okay, so let's get to our roundtable question.
He's got a roundtable question, Amy.
Dun, 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 dun.
About the actors, I want to know which actor you think captured the essence of their character best.
Amy's already rolling her eyes and getting that glee. Go ahead, say it.
Carl Urban.
There you go.
Carl Urban. Carl, flip it. Well, it's really a tie. I adore Carl Urban, and I could hear even the lilts in his voice for learning the accent so that he would match the original actor. The spirit of Nichelle Nichols lived in Zoe Saldana's performance. Every bit of the fire, the flair, the brilliance, the quiet reserved, the expression totally embodies her in a way that she did not need to fan dance around. And yeah, you got the Futurama jokes.
I'm so glad.
And I think that was something that honored her to the very end. So
yeah.
Even though I adore Carl Urban, it's going to be Zoe Saldana for me on this one.
Nice. Ed?
Oh, man.
It's hard.
It is hard because everybody here creates such a unique experience with these cast of characters that we've already come to know and love.
Mm-hmm.
God, I would probably have to say, you know what? I would have to say I really liked John Cho's character as Sulu. I feel like knowing that he received the blessing of, you know, George Takei and did his best to not create an Asian space, you know, space pilot or whatever his role is, a space crew member, but he was his own person who happened to be Asian in the film. And there was none of that whole like, oh, like there's even the joke of like hand-to-hand combat and he raises his hands like, oh, what kind of combat do you have? Fencing? And it's like, that is so on the nose of like everything that was expected from like George Takei in the first film. I mean, in the other previous series in the films. And it's like, he's not like a samurai. He's not like a ninja. He doesn't have all these things. He's not like the Asian stereotypes that you have. They didn't play off of that. In fact, they made fun of the fact that that was something that was done previous. He was just himself. And he had a great role to play. And I appreciate his representation in the film. So I would say John Cho.
Okay, nice, nice, nice.
What about you, Spence?
I'm going to have to side with Amy and say Carl Urban.
Wow.
Only because, like, he got... I don't want to say that word. That's the wrong word. He got the spirit of Leonard McCoy from DeForest Kelly's version down, I think, just to a science.
Yeah.
Because just, like, every time he opened his dang mouth, I was like, yeah, you were just like that other guy.
Yeah.
Like, very little has changed, but, like, it fit perfectly, really, for me. Especially just him being irritated all the time at Spock. Like, just exactly where he needed to be.
Yeah.
And I just adore, actually, like, his interpretation of the character, because I think he does, like, a phenomenal job.
Yeah. And those are built, like, those scenes are building that whole, you know, dynamic between him and Spock that they've carried throughout the series, that we see glimpses of in, you know, The Wrath of Khan, and kind of the breaking of that and the mind meld, if you will, that happens in Search for Spock and his reinterpretation of Leonard Nimoy's character through James Doohan's character. So yeah, I agree.
Okay, that's the end of the review.
Why don't we head on over to the rating, the review, the rating of the oh my gosh.
Okay, so yeah, let's rate the film. Is it pass or fail? How many monocles? We'll start with you, Eddie.
The film passes for me. I really did have a great time with this movie. This movie's story writing was absolutely so well done. The fact that Alex Kurtzman, who wrote this one, also goes on to write all the great shows that we, and be the showrunner for a lot of the great shows that are out now, such as Discovery and Picard. And
actually, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you. When I saw he wrote this, I was like, he wrote this?
Yep.
Oh, gosh.
Yep, yep. Like,
what happened, man?
I mean, he's also responsible for The Amazing Spider-Man 2, so, you mean, yeah.
That makes more sense. But yeah. Continue, sir.
His writing in this one is superb, and I do appreciate a lot of the little nuances, the callbacks, the little homages, everything that he did in this movie to make sure that not only did he honor the essence of the past, but also give us something fresh and new still at the same time, really does speak highly to his ability. Don't know what happened to Amazing Spider-Man 2. but the fact remains is that this movie really does a great job in its fluidity and the ability to tell a great story that is new to the universe. In terms of monocles, I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5. I really did appreciate all the performers in it. I really do love this universe that has been set. I haven't really seen any of the other subsequent follow-ups, so everything else from here is going to be brand new to me. So that'll be interesting to see where it goes. But I feel like this landed with solid footing as to establish the new generation of Star Trek and its cast of characters and the people that we know and love. So I give it a 4 out of 5. Amy.
Yay. This movie passes for me. I, again, got to watch something that was a delight. But also being able to watch Eddie watch it was a delight as well. But also watch Spencer watch me and Eddie watch it was really wonderful. And being able to share something you're passionate about with the people that are around you. And also for them to feel deeply and be moved by it as well is something that's really, really fulfilling. Again, this cast does a great job not only being a steadfast ensemble, but also shining in individual moments for each of them. And we highlighted a few. And yeah, this, to quote one of the most ridiculous lines from all the movies I've seen so far, Admiral, there be whales here.
Oh my
God. I'm giving it a 4 out of 5.
You and your whales.
Whales!
Okay, yeah, this movie passes for me. It's just really a fantastic Star Trek movie, especially for newcomers, because even if you haven't seen any of the previous films, if you started here, you're still getting a great story, and it's not going to be bogged down with, like, you know, the history of everything that happened up to that point. You get enough of, like, you know, through Spock's narration of what happened before so that, like, it's not going to bother you, which is great. So for me, yeah, passes. And then for rating, I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5.
Yeah.
Mostly because this is a great entry point for people who probably aren't into Star Trek. And it does a really good job of, like, honoring its legacy of what came before it and still telling something new and in a fun way. So they did a great job.
Yeah. And I think it goes to say that fostering that new fandom, just like what we've been talking about with, like, Star Wars and so forth, the ability to foster new fandoms and new communities within this span of time for the fandom of Star Trek is also a big plus for people to come to love it for what this has done so that they can go back and see what else has been available prior to. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosophers.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, sci-fi, even last year's Star Trek Month celebration. Check it out over at our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out wherever socials are, whether if it's facebook.com/filmlosophers or at Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. We're also on Threads at filmlosophy101, as well as Blue Sky at the Filmlosophers Podcast. So if you want to check us out, you can head on over there where you can see all of our antics, as well as our great extra content such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found
the only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane on Scene on Instagram and Instagram only. And I need more content, people.
She does need more content.
So please recommend things. And if they're terrible, it might get on there.
If it's terrible.
Barbie said I didn't have to watch The Godfather, so I'm going with that.
You know, I think every time you do that, Anthony Esteves grows another year older. So we need
to... He's oldish.
Oh, wow.
He's oldish. What? He's aging, just like everybody.
But you can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, TuneIn, or iHeart, or Pandora. You can check us out wherever those platforms are. Tune in to your heart's desire. Give us a follow at The Filmlosophers. Listen in. Tell us what you think. And we'd love to hear your thoughts. Drop us a line in the comments down below. Give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, especially for Star Trek.
Especially for... Well, I mean, I...
No, especially for Star Trek.
Okay. All right. Well... we mentioned that there'd be a giveaway. We are going to be doing a giveaway where...
What?
Yeah, at the end of the month, we are going to be giving away a special piece of Sharknado.
What?
Sharknado Wondery.
What?
Where we will be raffling off an original script signed by Thunder Levin.
What?
So...
How the heck did you get...
Wait!
You patched things up with Thunder?
So...
Wait, what?
So be mindful of that coming down the pipeline as we continue... All of our great episodes.
Oh my gosh.
Listen in.
We heck of missed something. We can't even participate in this. What the heck?
So listen in, and we do have a link to sign up on over through our link tree. So if you head on over to our socials, you can hit on that link in the bio and sign up through there. So
holy smokes.
But that about wraps up another great episode. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm whale enthusiast intern Amy.
Class dismissed.